Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for downloading another episode of Today We Learn. Sorry for the slight delay. It's a day late. We'll just get right on into learning and having some fun, right? Cool. Here we go. Today we learn number 60 with Greg Wallach.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Hello and welcome to Today We Learned. Hope you guys are having a good day.
Hope you're having a great day.
Oh, I always have to one-up me.
I always have to one-up me, don't you? The Price is Right one-upper.
I hope you're having a $1 day.
I'm having a $101 day.
You mother. Anyway, we got a great show for you today. We have a very special guest in the house.
Very special
comedian,
guest.
Podcaster, storyteller, Greg Wallach.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, good.
We're doing well. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you may know his dulcet tones if you go to the Standard on the first Thursday every month.
Yeah, it's the first Thursday of every month.
Yes, a show called Eat Your Words, stories, food, stories about food, where the two meet.
Stories
was that
words.
Was that a succinct
that is very succinct. We have a lot of comedians, storytellers, and the really unique thing about the show is every month we have a local chef, bartender, or foodie who comes on and talks about their food experience as well.
Nice.
Oh,
yeah.
Awesome.
What's been one of your favorite foodie guests in recent memory, or like
We had these two really fantastic guests, Mia Wasilovich and Pascal Boudard, and they're wild foragers, and they go out around Los Angeles, and they forage wild food,
and then
they do this really amazing restaurant pop-up, and I think eventually they're going to open their own space, but they were really fascinating, like all the stuff that grows around L.A. that's edible, but you should go out with an experienced person. You just shouldn't eat whatever you find.
Yeah, don't just eat something that you find on the ground unless you know that it's edible.
Right.
Locavore stuff always fascinates me. I went to college with this guy named Maximus Thaler.
Hold on, locavore?
Local. Vore meaning vore, like eater
camera.
Of.
Okay, yeah. That's a thing. Huh?
It is. It's a real word. Look it up. Google it.
Hashtag locavore.
Bing and decide it, bro. I went to college with this guy named Maximus Thaler, who I've been seeing more and more articles about him recently.
His name's Maximus, and he's a locavore, of course.
He's not a locavore. No. Well, he's sort of a locavore.
Okay. These words together are awesome.
I'm about to throw another buzzword at you, so brace yourself for impact before you jump in and derail this train again.
Go ahead.
He is a freegan, meaning that he dumpster dives and basically lives off the land. He goes to like Whole Foods and Trader Joe's, and when they're throwing out all their stuff for the day, he goes in the dumpster, salvages it, obviously, within reason, like make sure that it's not rotting or something like that. But he's been able to eat essentially for free, and he opened a moderately successful local business where they were selling these like dumpster sourced meals, essentially, like sort of dry.
Yeah,
it's all the idea when you hear dumpster, it's an immediate like I'm good, but I gotta respect his instincts for sustainable eating.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to be able to do that, because there's got to be some days where, you know, everybody buys the thing in the store, so they don't have anything to throw out.
Yeah.
I told a story actually in the show where in New York, I was a freegan for about a month because I wanted to just go out and experience it and see what it was like. And I feel like the crowd at the Standard Hollywood was a little bit shocked that I told a story about eating out of the garbage. And, but it was a really unique experience. It's amazing what people throw away. And then once you see it and once you notice that it's there, it's like one of those things you can't unsee.
Mm-hmm.
So it's everywhere. I mean, stores a lot of times will clear shelf space just because they need to put new stuff in there.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing is it's not all like, it's not just open food just chilling in there. Sometimes, yes, but a lot of it's still prepackaged. They're just throwing it out because like, oh, it didn't sell by the date.
Yeah.
It's not bad yet, but, you know. People's preconceived notions.
So there's freegans and locavores.
Locavore, yeah.
Locavore and freegans. What is there a thing for like free-ranged throwaway food?
jerks. Pretend. Yeah, I think that's when you like start projecting different layers of pretension on top of it. I'm sorry. This is not an organic dumpster.
I only shop at the high-end dumpsters. Yeah. The dumpsters with locks on them.
Yeah, locks I would imagine be the worst enemy. But just get some bolt cutters.
Bolt cutters.
With all that money you've saved not buying food. And you have another pretty exciting announcement today that just came out. The day this podcast was recorded.
Yes.
You're directing something very exciting. Tell us about this.
Yeah, I'm directing Hasan Minhaj's new one-man show. And it's just been such a great experience working with Hasan. He's one of the funniest guys out there. And the exciting announcement that we have today is the show was just, we were made fellows by the Sundance Institute for the New Frontiers Story Lab. So we're going to fly to Utah and spend a week working on the show. It should be really fun.
Congratulations. That's super cool, man. That's really cool.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Right. Really excited for him especially.
Yeah, so I take it this is a stage show, yes?
Yeah, it's a stage show. His idea is that we're going to kind of reinvent. It's a hybrid between comedy and storytelling, and there's going to be some visuals involved. And we're endeavoring to reinvent the comedy special.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. It's a noble endeavor.
Yeah, I think so.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well,
that's really cool.
We like to
keep an eye out for that.
Definitely. We like to start our shows generally with our guest giving either a fact about themselves that people might not know or something they learned recently. Very low pressure. This could be something as small as you just read something on the back of a Snapple cap or something life-changing. Like something you read on the back of a Snapple cap.
Well, the fact that springs to mind is the comedian Craig Conant was recently in Eat Your Words last month, and he not only is a great comedian, he also works at Trader Joe's, and he said he learned from a gay couple that came in who had a dog that if your dog has worms, you can feed your dog canned pumpkin, and it takes care of it.
Really?
Like you could save the trip to the vet.
Oh wow!
And oh my god!
I don't know if that's a fact. That's just something. That's just something I heard.
Just like a weird bit of.
But Craig was saying, you know, the gays love their dogs, mm-hmm. and so they must know. And I feel like I can say that because I'm also a gay. That's a fact. And I just thought that was interesting. Like, and because it's seasonal, all the pumpkin stuff is coming in.
Yeah.
So if you or your pets have any problems, I think pumpkin will straighten it out.
Nice. So the slow dominance of pumpkin spice on the national flavor zeitgeist has been for a good cause. It's deworming America, people.
Yeah.
Get on board.
Yeah, apparently pumpkin seeds are they're great for deparasiting, you know, with other sorts, not just the worms as well, but the flesh and the seeds of the pumpkin were used by the Native American tribes to heal wounds also back in the day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you guys
it's because they pumpkin seeds contain an amino acid called cucurbitin, which paralyzes and eliminates the worms from the digestive tract. So yeah. Pumpkin seeds
So watch out, worms. Your days are numbered.
So if you happen to get worms while you're being a locovore or a freegan,
Find a Starbucks.
Just find a Starbucks with pumpkin spice.
Do you guys feel like you have any parasites? Like you might have any parasites?
Oh, I certainly hope not.
Four of them living with me at the moment.
They called roommates. No, I have a little dog, and my number one fear is that I'm just gonna wake up and find like bed bugs or something or like fleas in the bed. Not that I don't let her like sleep in the bed, but somehow just proximity to her will result in my also getting some sort of parasite. I'm sure I'm just riddled with parasites, but they haven't been impacting my quality of life. So
you guys look good.
Thank you.
Both look
maybe
good.
That's the
you
thing. Maybe good. That's yeah. what, maybe they're like doing. maybe they're good parasites.
Yeah, they're parasites that are very self-conscious.
Yeah, it's like a remora on the bottom of a shark. They get a free meal.
Yeah,
sharks don't get covered in crumbs. Everybody wins.
I love it, Greg. I was reading on Wikipedia if that's correct. You were born in San Bernardino, California.
That is correct.
That is correct.
My family never lived there, but I don't know if my mom was like passing through. But
let's have the baby there,
right here.
But I did grow up in the Inland Empire, so it's not far away from where I grew up.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah, I was reading on Wikipedia, as I get a lot of facts from, because it's an encyclopedia.
It's a great pedia.
It's one of my favorite pedias. San Bernardino is the 17th largest city in California and the 99th largest city in the United States. Now, also...
Top 100.
Yeah. Now, also, San Bernardino is the poorest city of its population size in California and the second poorest in the United States next to Detroit, Michigan.
Wow.
Wow.
The silver medal to Detroit's
poorness. And the award for poor goes to...
Oh, man.
Detroit, Michigan. And a couple other, here's a, so that's some fun facts about San Bernardino. Then while we're, you know, I had this fact for a couple weeks now. I've been trying to toss it in here, and we've always, you know, not gotten to it. But speaking of Detroit, Detroit was founded by a gentleman by the name of Antoine de la Mont Cadillac, which is actually where the automobile manufacturer Cadillac named themselves after the founder of Detroit.
Huh.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Antoine was a French explorer and adventurer in New France, an area of North America that stretched from present-day eastern Canada in the north to Louisiana on the Gulf of Mexico in the south. The city he helped found, Detroit, became the world center of automobile production in the 20th century. William H. Murphy and Henry M. Leland, founders of the Cadillac Auto Company, paid homage to him using his name for their company and his armorial bearings as its logo in 1902. Now, fun fact, too, if I remember reading correctly, those two gentlemen were partners with, I believe, Henry Ford on one of the precursors to the Ford Motor Company. He had a few Ford automobile companies, but they flopped and they squandered. And then when he went to go start up Ford Motor Automotive, these two guys, William and Henry, went and started up Cadillac in 1902. So, yeah, Cadillac is named after the French explorer who discovered Detroit, Michigan.
Well,
yeah,
good for him.
Fun fact, yeah.
good job, Mr. Cadillac.
Good job, Antoine. I think it's Antoine. Yeah. De la Mont Cadillac.
Yeah,
that's my French. That's it. French. That's about the extent of my French. Is
beautiful. That was. Delightful pronunciation.
Yeah, I do what I can.
Mm-hmm.
I do what I can.
Well, let's keep the fact train rolling.
Yeah, absolutely. What else we got, Dan?
Kleenex! Yeah.
Greg, do you use Kleenex ever?
I'm not a big Kleenex user.
Are you more of a kerchief user?
I don't have a lot. I don't have a lot of sinus issues going on.
Nice.
I'm jealous.
I got one of those big, gigantic Kleenex packages at Costco, and I think I've broken into it. I've only taken out like two or three boxes.
Okay.
Over the span of a year, it's gonna last me forever.
Yeah.
Let's. That is. I wish I had that fact. Like. Frickin' desert climate means like nosebleeds galore when it gets too dry.
Oh, no.
So there's always something to look forward to.
Well, and you're also always getting punched in the nose.
I know. What can I say? I just got one of those faces. I'm just trying to make myself look as much like Owen Wilson as possible.
Are you really getting punched in the nose?
No,
Oh, okay.
But what if?
What
in
if?
A world.
In a world. He gets punched in the hand a lot.
Yeah.
It's Johnny Carpal Tunnel over here.
Right? Yeah, punched by words that I type.
It doesn't seem like you have a sort of brawling spirit.
You seem like
a pretty peaceful guy.
Exactly. I try to settle my arguments with words and fleeing rather than face-to-face confrontation.
I'm not a fighter. I'm a fleer.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think it's a pretty good distinction. But anyway, Kleenex was invented by someone named Kimberly Clark during World War I. In the year 1929, there were three different color tissues being introduced to the public, and later that year, they rolled out different designs. What an innovation. Man, what a time to be alive. They were the first company who introduced pop-up cartons, the tissue cartons that we know and love today, during 1928. And they were also, they also revolutionized things again when they invented their little travel packs that are now ubiquitous at travel sections at Targets across the nation. Originally, though... They were originally marketed as specifically a makeup and cold cream remover rather than like facial.
I can see that.
It's still facial tissue, but it was more to like dab away excess makeup. In 1925, the very first Kleenex tissue ad was used in magazines showing, quote, the new secret of keeping a pretty skin as used by famous movie stars. A few years later, the company's head researcher tried to persuade the head of advertising to market the tissue for colds and hay fever as well, since that results in runny nose and the like. The administrator declined the idea, but then decided to add a little bit of ad space, mentioning its use as a handkerchief. By the 1930s, it was being marketed with the slogan, don't carry a cold in your pocket. And because you don't want to carry your handkerchief around because it's covered in deadly germs and maybe polio, yeah. Whatever was going on at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just some tissue facts.
Here's the thing. Everybody's freaking out about Ebola, but, I mean, you know someday there's going to be like a polio on steroids that comes back. There has to be.
Yeah. Oh, well, honestly, with the Ebola.
Because they have a strand somewhere in a lab, and somebody's going to get a hold of that, and it's going to get out.
Yeah. Well, the thing with Ebola is CNN literally was showing clips from the 1995 film Outbreak while they were talking about it.
Are you serious?
Which is so irresponsible.
No.
Like, I could not believe. That's I thought people were. I saw it on Twitter. I thought people were joking at first, then I checked it out. They were indeed showing clips from frickin' Outbreak. You gotta be kidding me.
Hysteria. That's awful.
Yeah. On Nerdist.com, our science editor, Kyle Hill, wrote a really great article about why you shouldn't be freaking out about Ebola. Yes, it is a global problem and something that needs to be addressed and taken care of, but it's not a big deal that it is in the United States right now. They are containing it. In order to get Ebola, you'd pretty much have to go down to Texas, motorboat that guy, make out with him for a little while. Like, you'd have to really go out of your way to get Ebola if you, like, it's not as, like, deadly in terms of, like, how fast it's spreading as you would see in the movies. It's something that we can contain.
Now, define making out with him. I'm asking for a friend.
Yeah. Is that the fastest way to get it or the best way? It's the coolest way.
Also, as a gay guy, I'm really curious how you motorboat a guy.
Same way as a lady.
The same way?
Yeah, you just gotta want it bad enough.
There's, like... it's more like a bodyboard. It's like...
Might be a little more sternum.
Yeah, the stern of the boat. Yeah.
I learned something new.
Exactly.
I thought I knew how to do it all.
See, the podcast is already living up to its name. Yeah, so Ebola, don't freak out.
Don't freak out. Now, Greg, are you a football fan by any chance?
True to the gay stereotype, I am not really into sports. Okay. So I am not a football fan.
Fair enough.
Are you an Edgar Allan Poe fan?
Yeah.
Sure.
I feel like that's the answer. No one's like, oh, super into Poe.
Super
can't
into
get
Poe.
Enough.
I'm a Leonard Cohen fan.
Oh, yeah.
I'm probably listening to Leonard Cohen instead of watching football,
yeah,
I would imagine.
Just listen to Hallelujah on repeat.
Yeah. No, but what's up with football? I want to learn about it.
Well, because I'm not a football fan either, and I mean, I'm not.
I watch the sport.
Hello, does anybody here watch the sport football? Checking.
A game of sports ball on your television this Sunday.
Here's a fun fact I read today about the Baltimore Ravens. The Baltimore Ravens were established in 1996 as an expansion team derived from the Cleveland Browns. And they were named the name The Ravens. Was inspired by Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven as Poe. For a time, lived in Baltimore, and he died and is buried there.
And that story was later adapted for a television show starring Raven Simone called That's So Raven.
It very much was. It used to be called That's So Cleveland Browns,
it used to be called That's So Rudy Huxtable. Was she Rudy?
No. She wasn't Rudy.
What was her character?
She was the cuter one that they brought in.
Rudy was the granddaughter. Rudy was the daughter. There was Theo, there was Rudy, there was Vanessa, right? There was Vanessa, there was Rudy, there was Theo.
Was it Olivia?
Are you looking it up?
I think it was Olivia.
Yeah.
Let's see here, the Cosby Show. We're looking it up here.
There was Denise.
Denise? It was she was the one who left, right? No, Denise was the...
Was the one that was married to Lenny Kravitz for a while.
Okay.
In life, not in the show.
Yeah,
that would have been awesome.
On a very special episode of The Cosby Show.
There was Rudy, Theodore, Vanessa. Yep, Vanessa was Tempest Bledsoe. Lisa Bonet, yep, was Denise. She was married to...
Yeah, Raven Simone was Olivia Kendall.
Olivia, okay. Yeah, and Raven Simone was Vanessa's daughter then, I believe.
Yeah.
No, because there was the older one.
Just agree.
Sandra
was the oldest one.
She was the oldest one, Sandra, who moved out and, like, married the sailor or whatever.
Often MIA, like, almost never on, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And she was the one married to the sailor, and they had...
So you're saying Raven Simone is in the remake of the Edgar Allan Poe...
Exactly, yes. You know, she was in the gritty reboot.
Yeah.
That brought it back to its roots.
Yeah.
If they were saying things like that during football, I think I would like it more. If they were telling me about Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah, exactly. Just drop that in there in between talking about incredible first down conversions and the need to...
I'm sold.
Yeah.
Really run those routes.
While we're on the subject of Huxtable names,
go on.
Go on. This is a complete fluke here. This was not planned, ladies and gentlemen.
But it worked out.
It works out perfect. So Bill Cosby on The Cosby Show, he was married to Claire Huxtable, Felicia Rashad. Then they had the daughter, Rudy Huxtable. Then they had Theodore Huxtable, Theo. They had Denise and they had Sandra. But they also had a daughter, played by Tempest Bledsoe, who her name was Vanessa. Now, here's a fun fact about the name Vanessa. Vanessa is a feminine given name, especially popular in the United States and Germany. It was invented by the Anglo-Irish writer Jonathan Swift for Esther Van Hameren.
Really?
J. Swift? Yeah, J. Swift. It was invented by J. Swift, whom Swift had met for Esther's book or whatever, whom Swift had met in 1708 and whom he tutored. The name was created by taking Van from Van Hamgren's, I can't pronounce her last name, or last name, and adding Essa, a pet form of Esther. So Vanessa comes from the woman's last name and her an abbreviation of her first name, Esther. In 1726, the name Vanessa appeared in print for the first time in Cadenus and Vanessa, an autobiographical poem about Swift's relationship with Esther. And Swift had written the poem in 1713, but it was not published until 3 years after Esther died. So Vanessa first, the name Vanessa first is comes to the English language in 1726.
Nice. She's come a long way. Jonathan Swift, in case those of you out there don't know, he, famous Irish satirist, wrote A Modest Proposal, which was this really hard-hitting story where he's writing a letter basically saying, hey, we have all these starving children in Ireland. Instead of perpetuating the problem, people are starving, people are dying, why don't we just start eating the kids and turn them into, we can have baby skin gloves and all this stuff. And it was meant to be, a very satirical polemic, but a lot of people took it the wrong way. They're like, this guy wants to eat children. He's crazy. So,
oh, wow.
Right. Yeah,
really.
And that's why nobody knows who Jonathan Swift is.
That's why nobody eats kids in Ireland to this day.
Thank you, J. Swift.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen the movie Delicatessen? Do you know that
film? Yes, French horror film.
Yeah, one of my favorites. So good.
Hold on, I haven't heard about it. Talk about it while I look it up and sell me on why I should watch it.
Well, if you like very oversaturated camera shots and highly stylized horror with a comedic tinge and cannibalism, I think it would definitely be up your alley.
And romance. There's romance in there as well.
Oh, of course.
So it's a post-apocalyptic movie?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Dystopian?
Yeah, it's
perhaps?
More just something's not quite right, and then... Yeah, but it's otherwise, I'd say it's pretty grounded
the
in
the same
reality.
Director who went on to do Amelie.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Amelie's a great movie.
Yeah.
I'll get on board with that.
Yeah, I don't know if the soundtrack compares to Amelie's, but...
Now, does Delicatessen also feature a gnome that travels across the world, or no? Amelie had that.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Travelocity commercials that run in between.
There's a lot of the same actors. There's
race.
A lot of the same actors. I think the director used a lot of the same actors in both films.
Yeah, it's like his Whedonverse or his Christopher Guest crew.
that's good. Good stuff. Here's something that this actually kind of, here's the deal. I'm not a scientist, and it's very easily to blow my mind. But this kind of surprised me. If I were to ask you what Steam was, can you, you see Steam, right? Not the gaming platform. For
yes, not the...
here's the thing. Steam, when you see, pipes or, factories, and you see steam coming out of it, and you're like, oh, that's a bunch of steam, you're not seeing the steam. Steam's invisible. And what you're seeing is actually the cold, the steam is extremely hot water, and that's invisible. That's the gas itself, a steam, is invisible. And what you're seeing is the air around the steam condensate and form the gaseous clouds. So here's, I'm going to just read some copy and pasted info from Wikipedia here, as usual, for steam. Steam is the technical term for the gaseous phase of water, which is formed when water boils. Technically speaking, in terms of the chemistry and physics, steam is invisible and cannot be seen. However, in common language, it is often used to refer to the visible mist or aerosol of water droplets formed as the water vapor condenses in the presence of cooler air. So that kind of interests me. Like that kind of, I guess, had I really thought about it, like when you're, you know, if you're boiling water, you don't see the steam, but I guess if you had like your air conditioning on blast, you'd probably see it. Yeah.
So what would you call the thing that you do see?
Say
clouds?
Vapor?
I don't know, yeah.
Mist?
Vapor, that's very good. That's a very good question. Vapor mist? Like condensated water?
Condensation.
Because isn't that all...
thick water.
Yeah, but isn't that really a cloud then, right? Because clouds are essentially condensation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So technically, the steam
is just a collection of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it essentially
pre-clouds.
Oh, when it's boiled down, they're just pre-clouds. Zing, pun intended.
So to go completely up. Well, no. Let's see. Okay. Steam can be used in cooking. Steam dumplings, Chinese food. Boom.
Sure.
Follow me on this journey.
All right. We're there.
Okay.
I'm following you.
So Chinese food. I just looked this up on Mental Floss because the title intrigued me. They're asking how Chinese is Chinese food. The answer is clearly not very Chinese. When you think of Chinese food, you think of those little paper white boxes, usually with the red writing and some stylized font.
Right.
And chickens named after various generals.
Yes. A fun fact about those boxes.
Yes.
Those boxes, the Chinese food boxes that you get in the Americas, if you unfold them, they make a plate.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I will.
There's a couple of videos on the internet about that.
Yeah. Google that and have your mind blown. If you've ever had those paper boxes, Chinese food boxes, they're made to where when you unfold them, they origami into a dish so you can keep them on that same thing.
However, a friend of mine who's Chinese, not that he speaks for all Chinese people, but a friend of mine who's Chinese.
What's his name?
He says, dude, you're just flattening out a box. Like, it's not a plate. But I was pretty impressed.
Yeah.
I was pretty impressed.
Well, tonight it has form and function.
Essentially, a plate is just a flat box.
I mean, I also didn't have many qualms about just eating out of the box.
I do that with my cereal.
But yeah, these just pour milk in there.
Just pour milk. Shake it up.
Nice.
Shake it up. And
it's a bold.
It
it's bold.
Yeah.
So these iconic white pails, they were invented November 13th, 1894, in Chicago, by the not extremely Chinese guy, this inventor named Frederick Weeks Wilcox. He wanted to improve upon wooden oyster pails that they used to transport raw mollusks from the fish market. So they are about as American as they come, but they went on to have greater purpose for allowing takeout to go from the restaurant to your home. And they first started being used in Chinese restaurants when they started popping up in the mid-1800s, when immigrants, mostly from present-day Guangzhou, went to California during the gold rush. And by the 1920s, the eateries had spread. Chinese restaurants were featuring two menus, one for traditional fare, the other for the more Americanized fare. And the latter menu, which had a lot of sweet, salty, syrupy sauces, became this cuisine unto itself. So, basically, traditional Chinese food and American Chinese food, two wildly different things, though I'm sure we all could have deduced that.
Huh.
And fun fact about General Tso, General Tso's chicken, in the Boston area, and only in the Boston area, like New England, they call it General Gao.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I knew it as General Gao growing up, but I was like, who's this second general? We're going to fight him.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't hate Chinese food. It's not my go-to, but I do like the I love rice. Rice is very good.
Yeah, sick grain.
And sick grain. It's my favorite grain. And orange chicken. I don't know if that's technically if that's like fake Chinese food, but orange chicken and like those edamame things or whatever.
Oh, edamame is actually Japanese in origin.
Oh, okay, then.
Yeah.
Oh, those are still delicious.
Yeah, but I mean, most American Chinese food at this point has sort of like a pan-Asian slant.
Right.
Is orange chicken Chinese or what is that?
Yeah, I think that's sort of like the General Tso's chicken. And
okay.
If you're eating with a certain Huxtable and she was like, what's that? You can say, that's so, Raven.
Callback jokes.
Boom. Count
Boom.
It. Market 8, dude.
No, 9 0. That's There we go. No, that wouldn't work. I'm just thinking of like, there's, you ever have pho or pha?
Yeah, pho.
Fa. Yeah. There's a lot of those. A lot of those restaurants have like puns. And
I think it's a law that if you open a Vietnamese restaurant, yeah, it has to have some sort of pho pun in it. There's unforgettable. There's one in Beverly Hills that's pronouncing it wrong for their pun to work because it's 9021 pho, and I think they want 9021 pho.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. I see.
But you know, you can't win them all.
Yeah.
My buddy Alex wanted to open a Japanese Indian Vietnamese fusion place called Pho Ramen Non.
It's so stupid.
It's, I thought it was pretty incredible. It's like a triple pun right there.
I love it.
Well, there's a really fantastic food truck in Portland,
okay,
called Fried Egg. I'm in love.
Oh my god,
that's good.
And those guys are fantastic, and it's just the most amazing fried egg dishes you will ever have in your life. But all of their fried egg items on the menu are song puns.
Really? Are they all? It's obviously like, it's the cure for your hunger.
Yeah,
but.
Like the Yoko Ono and. I'm trying to think of some of them, but the Fried Egg I'm in Love guys are really great.
Yeah.
And I met them during the Bridgetown Comedy Festival.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I want to get up to Portland someday because the food scene up there just sounds extremely good.
But if you like fried eggs and you like puns, visit that truck.
Yeah, definitely seek that truck out. And if you don't like puns but you still like eggs, I recommend the Egg Slut truck in Los Angeles.
Oh, very,
that's
very good.
One of my favorites. Like, really good breakfast foods.
I'm on friedegglove.com, their website, and some of their things are some of their menu items are smells like protein spirit, sriracha mix a lot, free range against the machine, back and black bean. Those are pretty funny. I was a girl. I was seeing a girl for a little bit, and me and her had this game where we would come up with like banned food truck puns. So it was just like for the duration that we were hanging out. Every now and then we'd text each other food truck puns, and I mean there were some really good ones. Like
limp biscuits,
or
taco to the hand.
Yeah. What is it now? I'm thinking it's creams of the scone age.
Oh god.
Oh nice.
homemade creams, homemade scones, everything you need.
There was Bjork and beans.
Oh no.
Nice. So dumb.
Puns are so fun though. But yeah.
And just the string cheese incident.
Speaking of food and restaurants, my buddy was just filming a commercial, and he was just filming a McDonald's commercial, and he hit me to the fact that downtown Los Angeles somewhere, there is a McDonald's, fully operational McDonald's, that is it's just for commercial purposes.
Really?
It's fully functional.
It's not open to the public?
Not open to the public. It's fully functional. It's got a basement for costumes and all that, but they only use it, like, you could use it as a real McDonald's, but it's actually only for filming.
Wow.
Oh, so it's like a set. It's a set.
Yeah, basically.
It's a set, but it's a fully functional set.
Yeah, it does all the functions of McDonald's, like you could cook all the food there, but it's specifically for commercials. Yeah.
But if you are the small staff that I imagine works there, you'd be so lonely.
Absolutely.
Like, you'd...
Yeah.
You'd only make like one Egg McMuffin, and then you'd
for themselves.
Yeah, then you hang around.
Like, I have to pay for this, right? I'm looking up some other McDonald's facts on Business Insider. This article is from 2012, so the facts might be slightly out of date. McDonald's feeds 68 million people per day, which is roughly 1% of the world population. That's pretty absurd, right there.
Oh, wow.
They sell about 75 hamburgers every second.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but to bring it back around to the front, I think the first McDonald's was in San Bernardino, California.
Yeah, it was definitely in California by Ray Kroc. He wanted to make his own hamburger stand.
Or I think San Bernardino tries to claim that they were the birthplace of fast food, at least.
Yeah, I'm trying to...
And Hell's Angels, I think. And Poverty Now.
Yeah, it was indeed opened in San Bernardino.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The first McDonald's was in San Bernardino.
The McDonald's restaurant concept was introduced in San Bernardino, California by Richard Maurice McDonald of Manchester, New Hampshire. It was then modified and expanded by their business partner, Ray Kroc,
who bought them out
and formed the McDonald's Corporation.
That's pretty good. I don't even have a computer in front of me. That was pretty
good. Yeah.
That's really good, yeah. Ray Kroc, if my memory serves me, was a shake salesman. He was a blender salesman, actually, or malt. And he would sell these like commercial grade, industrial grade blenders to restaurants and you know companies like that and diners. And he seen this and he liked the burgers so much he tried selling them a couple. And they ended up like they if my memory serves me, they did really well selling shakes, and they sold hamburgers and shakes. And Ray wanted to turn it like to franchise it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like he was the driving force behind. Turning McDonald's into what it is today, which is why he ended up like buying them out, I believe, and going forth and just
like sort really of good. Automation. It was kind of the first time where automation met food, I think.
Yeah.
They,
for better or worse.
They originally called it the Speedy Service System,
which is why the mascot was Speedy the hamburger, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I remember correctly, their old mascot was a hamburger.
Yep.
When's the last time you guys ate at McDonald's or fast food? I'm just curious.
Well, I'll be honest. The most recent time I ate at McDonald's was a couple weeks ago. I was in New York. We rode bicycles down. We were in Manhattan visiting my buddy Joel, and we rode bicycles down to the World Trade Center, and we were riding around, and we were going to find Wall Street, and we wanted to stop and grab a quick bite to eat, so we stopped at McDonald's there. Now, prior to a couple weeks ago, it was probably a good 3 years, just because wow. I try to eat healthy, and I really don't like McDonald's. I love their Chicken McNuggets, but I'm not going to go out of my way to eat them, and it's not healthy for you at all, so I really kind of don't eat McDonald's at all.
New York is such a strange place, though, to stop at one, because there's not that many there.
No, but they're super cheap there, I feel like. And this is how stupid it was, how dumb it is. They were a two-story McDonald's, and there was a DJ. there was a DJ in a McDonald's with a laptop and his name stickered on the laptop.
That's fantastic.
It's all happening at McDonald's, yeah. You guys, and we are missing out.
The exclusive club.
I'm playing Mickey D's tonight. Be there. We put Molly in all the burgers.
Moby's at the Wall Street McDonald's.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, no, for me it's definitely been a minute since I went to McDonald's. It's been within the last year, and before that it wasn't for quite some time. I went to Wendy's maybe 3 months ago because I was just starving late at night and didn't want to order an entire pizza, so I'm like, I'll just get some spicy nuggets. Other than that, I don't do a lot of fast food. I find myself doing more food trucks or stuff like that because there's a lot of late night options here, which is great.
Oh yeah, there's amazing food in LA. What's really fun about doing the show at the Standard. I get to meet all these food people and be part of the food community, which mm-hmm. is really fun.
It's hard sometimes. It's late at night. You're like, I almost have too many options. I wish that someone could make this decision a little bit easier for me.
Yeah. What about you, Greg? When's the last time you ate at McDonald's?
I was just thinking while you guys were talking, I think it has been so long that I can't recall. That's not really, if I have to eat fast food, that's not really my go-to spot.
What is your go-to?
Well, I did a show in Silver Lake not too long ago, and then after the show, some guys were like, oh, you were so funny. And the guy says, I make medicated gummy bears.
Oh, man.
Do you want one? And I was like, what is that? And he's like, it's a marijuana gummy bear. And I was like, yes, please. And so and it was so tiny. I didn't think it's so tiny. But I ate it, and then I proceeded to get extraordinarily high. So I walked just next door to the Del Taco, which was only like 3 or 4 feet, but I'm sure it took me 45 minutes. And I hadn't eaten at Del Taco since maybe high school.
Okay.
And I was in there eating a quesadilla, and I thought to myself, oh my God, this quesadilla is so amazing. Yeah. I wish there was a place that made these. And then I was like, you're sitting in it. And then I was excited.
Mind blown.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't eat fast food, but if I, like, when I do, it'll be, like, I mean, I'll eat, I shouldn't say I don't eat fast food, but when I do, it's like once a month, maybe it'll be Del Taco. Like Del Taco is my go to, just because I love tacos.
I went for the first
pretty
time.
Pretty delicious.
I went
right?
for the first time
their
this
tacos
last
are
year.
Actually, really good. I mean, their standard tacos are way better than.
I think the problem is their prices are so horrifyingly low that I don't trust them because of it. I'm like, this has to be horse meat.
Then
you're charging me less than a dollar for this.
Then don't go on Taco Tuesdays when you can get three tacos for a dollar.
I won't. I won't.
I'll eat nine of them.
Oh, wait. One more quick McDonald's fact, because this is particularly horrifying. The $8.7 billion in revenue from franchise stores alone makes McDonald's richer than Mongolia,
oh
the
my
country.
God.
I was speaking of McDonald's. I don't have the facts in front of me, but I read the other day, I'm pretty sure it's McDonald's, that they make most of their money in renting. Like, they own, if I read it properly, and it is McDonald's, I could be flubbing the facts for our listeners, but I think McDonald's makes most of their profit off of renting their locations to the franchisors.
Oh, okay.
I could be wrong, but I feel like I read that some fast food place makes most of their money in renting the properties to the owners.
Wow, that's amazing.
Let's just assume it's McDonald's.
So kind of a little bit like a pyramid scheme.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Although, don't sue me, McDonald's. Yeah. I'm just supposing that.
Exactly. Yeah. We can't prove it.
Hypothetically speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, good old McDonald's. Good old McDonald's.
Makes me want to shake, though, I have to say.
Yeah, it's almost... Actually, it's not almost. I was about to say, it's almost Shamrock Shake season. It's still months away. Hey, I get it a little ahead of myself. March is right around the corner.
I used to drink so many Shamrock Shakes because they're so good. Then McDonald's went and made them the triple thick shakes, which are thicker than normal. And then all of a sudden they changed themselves to this McCaff horse shit, and they wanted to be like an upscale, like, so it's McCaffey. It's like McCafe.
Yeah.
And it's everything's like smaller and in nicer glasses, and you don't get the shakes in like the 32 ounce cups anymore. Now you get a shake and it's in like a small clear domed like Starbucks cup.
It's a little vial.
And
yeah,
it's
the
same
price. Have the dome.
It's the same price, and they got like they put whipped cream and a cherry on it. It's like, look, dude, I don't want whipped cream. I don't want a cherry. I just want 32 ounces of Shamrock Shake for $3.
And what is the Shamrock flavor? What is
mint.
That?
Yeah, it's
mint.
Like
it's
peppermint,
mint?
I believe.
Oh, okay,
whatever mint chocolate chip is without the chips.
Yeah, and if you want chocolate in there, if you mix that with you can get them mixed together, and that's called a McLeprechaun.
Okay,
yeah,
I was
fun,
thinking like
fun little fact,
like grassy,
yeah,
like grassy flavored kale flavor.
Yeah, I will say kale, surprisingly, a better smoothie ingredient than one would expect.
Yeah, it's surprising.
Never had it.
Yeah,
like kale.
And someone was telling me recently that iceberg lettuce is actually also like very good for you, but kale has a way better like PR firm, so they
that's
most,
true
everyone's kale. In the people are in the pocket of Big Kale, everyone ignores the lettuce.
Big Kale, yeah. Is it so what is that a, it's pretty much the same, right? What is kale? I don't even know. I just know everybody talks about it.
Kale is a it's a green leafy vegetable.
It's a cruciferous
like a
green, right? It's a leafy cruciferous
yeah.
green. Although I am a fan of an iceberg, good old-fashioned iceberg wedge.
Yeah. Of course, yeah, a nice wedge salad. Although sometimes I'm like, why couldn't you cut this up for me? I'm paying enough.
Although I don't like it as much when it's unwedged. I like something, there's something about the wedge
yeah.
that's really satisfying.
Just inviting.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the wedge? I don't eat lettuce, I don't like lettuce. So what's
really?
Yeah, I can't stand it. What's a wedge? What's a lettuce wedge?
You know how you when the lettuce comes from the market,
okay. you can get like a head of lettuce.
It's a head of lettuce, and then they just cut a wedge shape out of it.
Yeah, like
okay,
a little
so
triangle
they cut into
or
it, so like a pie chart,
like a swath of lettuce,
right?
Yeah,
and then usually it's served with like I think some blue cheese on top, maybe some bacon. Right?
Yeah, it depends. It depends on what kind of.
Okay.
So
it's in the shape of like a like that.
And it's just wedge. Satisfying because you're eating a wedge shape.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like healthy pizza.
It's like eating a cake. Like eating cake lettuce.
Yeah.
Cake.
Oh God, that would be a truly miserable cake.
I ask at the beginning of the of Eat Your Words at the Standard, I always like to ask the audience about what they've been eating and their diets and stuff. Yeah. So when you just very vehemently said that you do not, that you do not eat lettuce, and so what is the main? What's your diet about? I'm interested.
Oh, besides not liking lettuce, it's the devil. It's the worst thing in the world. I hate raisins too. Hashtag raisins are the fucking fuck.
They're
raisins.
Just grape corpses.
Raisins are the worst. Raisins are like, hey, do you want to make this really delicious thing worse? Let's add raisins. Cookies, bagels, everything.
I mean, I agree with you as far as oatmeal cookies are concerned.
Everything. Don't put raisins in anything. They're the worst thing ever. What's my diet? I eat a lot of protein. I'll eat some carbs. Like, I'll eat breads. I like eat a lot of chicken. I eat a lot of pizza. Goddamn, I've been on a pizza kick. It's been so hot lately that I generally I'll cook a lot. I'll cook, cook in my house because it's cheaper and way healthier. But for like, it's been on like a heat
wave. Yeah, there's been a definite heat wave.
So I'll eat. Lately, I've been eating, sandwiches. I've been making, like my own subs, with like cold cuts or like turkey and ham and
salami. Do you put any fruits or veggies on there?
I'll put some cheese.
Some cheese?
So you're not a fruit of the cow? You're not a big fruit veggie guy.
I'm not a fruit guy. I'm a veggie guy if they're heated or steamed.
Gotcha.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, or. Like, condensated. What did we
say?
Yeah,
if they've been dipped in clouds.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. I prefer my vegetables dipped in clouds, please. Can I have a bowl of cloud to dip this in?
Yeah.
I'll eat meats and vegetables and that's about it. Cereals.
Yeah, it's always
a lot of Kool-Aid. I love Kool-Aid.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. There's your fruits and vegetables.
That's
right
my
there.
Red. Purple. Grape's a fruit.
Yeah. You're eating a lot of red.
Red's a fruit.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's my diet. I mean, I'm healthy. I work out. I exercise.
You look good.
Yeah. You're not. You haven't dropped over dead yet.
Do massive amounts of blow.
Yeah. No, that's all that. That's I'm the Hollywood diet.
I'm starting up. I've started up so many businesses in the last week.
So many ideas. Just so gotta. You want to share them with the world?
Just can't turn them off.
Oh man. Anyone else feel their gums? Yeah.
Yeah, right on. Well, there's my diet. What about you, Dan? If I'm going to say my diet, we got to tell them the listeners about your diet.
Just pretty much 100% peanut butter. Just like peanut butter.
Oh,
all
God
day.
Oh goddamn! I love peanut butter. Peanut butter and eggs too. I eat the shit out of
peanut butter. Yeah, no, I try to keep it pretty healthy. I diversify with. I like veggies. My biggest problem is that I usually forget that there's no food in my fridge until I get home and I'm just looking at a desert of sauces.
Right.
I'm like, oh, this is unfortunate. But no, I try to. Have some lean proteins, fruits, veggies. I love fruit. I love vegetables. They can be steamed, raw, cold, hot, you name it.
Nice.
Raisins I've come around on a little bit. They're not my favorite, sure. But I will do it if it's the only thing that I have going. Yeah.
Do people just have extra raisins lying
exactly
around?
Like,
dude, people have raisins all over the place.
I know. They're like, they're trying to give them away. They're like, otherwise I have to fucking eat
raisins,
them.
Raisins are the ants of the fruit.
But if I...
of the fruit, they're so unwanted and they're everywhere.
Yeah. Meanwhile, peanut butter is the super cool uncle that you want to hang out with.
Yeah, peanut butter's pretty great.
Yeah, it's good for you in moderation. Some protein in there, great flavor. If I had to survive on one thing, if I could only have one thing for probably till the end of time, it'd probably be peanut butter because I just don't.
And
I won't get tired of it.
Probably survive on it.
Yeah, I definitely could. I would probably not be the healthiest person in the world, but I could be worse.
Yeah, but if you were, you would be healthy because you'd be active. You wouldn't be sitting around like if you only could eat peanut butter forever, it'd be like an apocalypse.
You can,
or something
you can either eat peanut butter forever or die and do anything else. I might go with peanut butter.
I'd go with peanut. I would not like. Yeah, I'm a huge advocate of peanut butter, as the listeners know.
Today's show is brought to you by the Peanut Butter Council.
If you follow me on Twitter or Instagram, I tweet and post about peanut butter a lot. I'm a huge advocate of it. And I love peanuts.
Yeah.
I love peanut butter.
Nice.
Well, I've been shocked recently by the market uptick in other assorted nut butters. Everything from sunflower, almond, cashew. I feel like there's a butter for everything.
They want to get on that peanut butter train, man.
Yeah.
They see that peanut butter making money and they want some of that scratch.
Like, I want that Skippy scratch.
I think it's like everybody loves smoothies too. I feel like it's this regressive thing where we're kind of we want it mushed up and blended up so we can just yum 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 like a baby.
Yeah, you want to make a non-fruit based or veggie based smoothie even better. Add some fucking peanut butter in there. Throw some banana in for good measure. You got yourself a Jimmy Carter.
You won't crash. You won't crash if there's some protein
in there. It's nature's cocaine.
You know what else is... you always say to put peanut butter on burgers, right?
Peanut butter on a burger is fantastic, and I will fight anyone who questions it or says otherwise.
Now we are understanding how you get punched in the face so much.
Yeah, I will fight anyone who is wrong about peanut butters and burgers. It sounds weird, and I was skeptical at first, but I promise you it's worth it.
So good. I love that. Cool. Well, on that note, hashtag peanut butter.
Yeah.
Greg, now is the part of the show where we're on the wrap up. Sell yourself. Where can people find you?
On the World Wide Web.
Sell yourself completely. Every project you want to plug or whatever. Say this is the time for you to just spout off what you want to promote or say.
Well, thanks. As we told people at the top of the show, I am the host of Eat Your Word, Stories About Food at the Standard Hollywood, the first Thursday of every month. Come on down. The show is completely free, and it recreates sort of that metaphorical kitchen table where people get to hang out and talk and share great stories. People can also find me on gregwallach.com and at Greg Wallach, GREGWALLOCH for Twitter and Instagram. And I don't know where else. I live in West Hollywood. If you keep your eyes peeled, you'll see me walking around. Come up and say hi.
He's just like us.
Yeah. But thank you guys so much. This has been so much fun.
Yeah, thank you for coming on, man. We appreciate it.
We really appreciate it. Thanks for joining us. Fun episode, fun times.
And if you'd like to find us on the World Wide Web, well, guess what? You're in luck. We're on there. You can find the podcast on Twitter at TWL Podcast. You can email us a fact. If you have something you want to share with the world, send it our way. Send it to todaywelearnedpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook, Today We Learned with Razzle and Dan. And if you want to talk to us individually, well, guess what? You can do that, too. I am at osteoferocious.
And I am at MyNameIsRazzle2.
Like the number two?
The number two. Currently, it's been a year.
Not like look who's talking to?
Nope. It's My Name is Razzle, the number two. That's not the number two, because a lot of people, when they ask me, it's like, oh, my name is Razzle, too. And then they'll just type in Razzle. But it's My Name is Razzle.
The Arabic numeral.
Yes. Two.
Yes.
Yes. One of these days I'm going to change it, but it's kind of funny.
But for now,
Fuck it. Yeah. If it's not, then I've changed it. If you're listening to this in a year and it's not there, I've changed it.
Yeah, so you'll figure it out. If you just search Razzle in the little search box on Twitter, you'll find him.
You'll find me.
Yeah.
You'll find me. Yeah. So,
or you'll find that terrible Wonka candy.
First it's a candy, then it's a gum.
Oh, wow. I'd say gum falls under the category of candy still. On my base is covered.
Chewable treat.
They're all chewable.
Better than Fruit Stripes gum. We won't unwrap that logo.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Right on. Well, Greg, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh gosh, thank you guys. So fun.
Once again, Aristotle, thanks for sitting in with us and taking care of this. Everybody say hello, Aristotle. Tweet at Aristotle. Aristakos, tell him hello and say, oh, you're doing an awesome job for not talking. No. I keep trying to get him to talk, but he's like, I'm gonna sit here. So yeah, he's shrugging his shoulders right now. So say something, Aristotle.
Hello.
See, there he is. He does exist. Shout out to him. Thanks again for the listeners. Feel free again if you're on iTunes, give us a good rating, give us a good review. Stitcher, all those other things. I'm pretty sure we're on all those podcasting things. So whatever way, whatever form or medium you're using to listen to podcasts, give us a good rating on there and give us a good review. And share this with your friends. And fuck raisins. And as always,
peanut butter. It's what's for dinner.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Greg.
Sure, thank you.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.